Welcome, everyone, to the Advice Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, as always, the Advice Show. And today's topic, should society tell parents how to raise their children? Now, as always, we got Ms. Gabriella online. How you doing, Ms. Gabriella?
I'm fine.
You sure you're fine, or are you more than fine?
I'm more than fine, actually. But okay.
Yeah, we like to, you know, y'all know us on the show. We like to have fun and everything. Now, tonight, we got a very special guest. We got a professional. We have Dr. David Wilson. He's a clinical psychologist. So how you doing, Dr. David Wilson?
I'm doing very well. I'm happy to be here.
No, we're definitely glad to have you on the show. So before we get started, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice.
I'm a psychologist practicing in Austin. I specialize in mood and anxiety disorders in my private practice, but I also do a lot of work with parents and helping them become mindful parents and helping them to understand the process of development and how a child's brain develops and the impact that parenting can have on the child's healthy developing brain.
Okay, and in your practice, I mean, is it something that's very busy that parents need your help in this day and time?
Oh, it's very, very popular. And a lot of this research that I use for my practice, it's cutting edge research. And it's kind of come out within the past 10 years as the technology to explore how the brain functions is caught up with the actual therapy. So we have hard evidence, scientific evidence, to support the changes in the brain and how the brain develops over time.
Now, you were telling me, and also I want to know a little bit more about this, that you was writing a book and you're close to having this released. So what is, you know, the book about?
The book is based on years of my research in what helps you be happy and less stressed. So it's a workbook that provides a whole variety of different techniques that can increase your well-being as well as improve your potential to be successful and fulfilled in life. And the thing I tell people is you really have to make it work for you. What works for one person doesn't necessarily work for another person. And that goes into parenting as well, as we'll probably get into. But this book gives you a whole variety of scientifically supported techniques that can actually rewire your brain for success and happiness. It should be out in a couple of months. At the end, we can probably, I'll give my website information and email information as well as an opportunity to sign up for a monthly newsletter. I would like to offer and possibly mention this again, that anyone who does sign up for the newsletter and they put the Advice Show in the subject heading, I'll give them a 10% discount on the book when it's published if they choose to purchase a copy of it.
Awesome. So if y'all want to purchase Dr. Wilson's book, just make sure you put in the Advice Show and you get 10% off. So, Dr. Wilson, you saw the link of the father whipping his daughters. Now, do you understand what happened fully, why he did that?
Not completely. I guess they were dancing and they put that
okay.
video up.
All right.
Twerking.
Have you seen anyone twerking at all? Do you know
yes,
what that
I
is?
I have.
Yeah. Now, Ms. Gabrielle, what's so funny? I have to ask. I don't assume anything, Ms. Gabrielle.
Lord, I'm surprised he hasn't seen twerking videos.
Well, he have YouTube like everybody else.
Well, I mean, because they make it seem like not a lot of, like, they make it seem like there's just a specific group of people that look at twerk videos and not just the whole world, so...
You mean black people, Ms. Gabriella?
Pretty much.
Yeah, you're dancing around it. Anyway, so Dr. Wilson, basically what happened with that video was this. It was two things that actually happened. At first we thought, well, he caught his daughters making a twerk video, okay? And any daughter of yours that's twerking, that is something that's completely whoredom. No man want to see his daughter shaking her behind in that form or fashion online. As you know, Dr. Wilson, you know that you put things online, you can't get that back.
Right.
And on top of that, which came out later, they snuck out of the house as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you have a father that saw that and his daughter sneak out of the house as well. And then now it made me understand his anger, because at first I was like, why are you so angry with it? But once I found out that, that's why he was so angry. So, now, on the opinion of those who feel that he was right for doing that, why do you feel they say he's right for that?
why do people feel he's right for doing that?
Yeah, I want to hear both sides of the coin, in your opinion.
Well, from what I read in the comments is that, you know, he's taking action to try to instill some respect and as well as some, I guess, like positive self-esteem within his daughters. He's wanting to have them be respectable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's where one group of people are coming from. Another group is probably thinking he was too severe in the punishment and that didn't need mm-hmm. to be as intense.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you think those young ladies that doing this, do you think it's being condoned at home?
That's what I was wondering.
Because he was, because the girls are going over to visit him, you know, the other every other weekend thing. So 90% of the time, they're with their mother.
Mm-hmm.
So the father sees this, and he tries to correct this.
Yeah, I was wondering if you have more background information on all this, as far as, like, you know, their situation and what led up to it. Because I didn't really get much aside from...
Well, from what I've, you know, because I've been doing, you know, the following this story, was that, you know, they are, you know, the mother is a single mother, and... they have children together, and that was their father, okay? You're visiting, doing, you know, every other weekend thing, you know, as the courts give you, you know, custody for a man to do that. And they did the twerking video, put it up on Facebook. He found out about that. And then they snuck out of his home as well while it was over there for that particular weekend. So, in my opinion, the girls would not have done that unless they was something they was already doing at home with their mother.
Mm-hmm. What about him recording the video? What was...
Well, he didn't record the video.
Okay.
He didn't even know it was being recorded. No, he didn't do that. No, the recorder was left on for what he caught them doing.
Oh, I see.
And that's how it got recorded. And the only reason he got turned in, because you cannot see his face. The only reason he got arrested is because the mother found out what he did, saw, you know, the marks on them, called the police, and that's how he got arrested.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is a big issue with separated parents, is being on the same page, doing the co-parenting, and knowing, you know, there's unfortunately a lot of the problems of the mom and dad's personal relationship end up affecting the kids, particularly in a separation.
Because, in my opinion, a single-parent household is what has caused a lot of the problems in today's society. I mean, do you agree?
It contributes to it. It does. And I really like the idea this show topic is, you know, how does society affect our children? You know, should they have an influence on how we parent? And what's interesting is, yes, in a way, society should have an impact on our children. The problem lies in the certain foundations of society and how it can compromise healthy development. But that's why I'm here, to try to put out this information to help spread the word of the things that we can do as a group of people to create a peaceful, more happy, and healthy society.
So at the brink of a separation, because I've been through it, I know how it works. Everybody have their issue, everybody have their side. Now, sometimes one party, I can relate to this. The woman, the mother, can be very bitter about the end of the relationship. And she can really want to see a lot of harm come to the father, okay? And she will do whatever it takes to maybe poison the children against, you know, the father, or undermine his authority. Now, if you're teaching your daughter to undermine the authority of the own father, what kind of tone is that setting for his, especially his female children?
Yeah, I agree. It's not good. It's passing along what I often call transgenerational trauma. One generation to the next, the problems of the parent get inherited by the children.
Okay, now Ms. Gabrielle, you got anything you want to add?
Well, I've seen that happen a lot of the times. Well, we spoke about this before, but that show was deleted. But we spoke about how there's been times when a mother will abuse her son to get back at the father because the son reminds her of the father and things like that. And there's a lot of cases where people suffer abuse at the hands of their mother just because she doesn't know how to just let go.
Hey, Ms. Gabriella, give me a second. I see you got a call coming in. Area code 469, you on the show?
Everybody show, this is Human Paradox. How you doing, my brother?
How you doing, brother?
Oh, good, man. I'm just chiming in. I haven't even heard what the topic is, but I know this is the day that you're on, so...
Yeah, well, it was Should Society Tell Parents How to Raise Their Children? I have Dr. David Wilson, clinical psychologist, on the show. If you want to ask me any questions?
Oh, okay. No, I'm going to listen to it for a few minutes, and then I'll hit one when I'm ready.
Okay, shoot me a message in the chat room when you're ready to come back on.
All right.
Bye. All right, Ms. Gabriella, continue.
Okay, so like I was saying, there's been instances where a mother will just not know how to let go of her past relationship. And because of that, she'll try to take out any anger that she has on her child. And this is the reason why I see a lot of people in my generation running around with so many problems. Because, you know, with the whole single mother epidemic that was in the 90s, now you have all these people running around with all these, like all this trauma from the past. And I can't tell you how many men that I've seen that are so hurt, you know? It's
yeah.
so bitter. Because,
yeah. Yeah. yeah, because of a lot of times it's because of their mother. Because sometimes their mother take out their anger on their children. Now, Dr. Wilson, we notice in this day and time that a lot of single mothers are walking around with not being diagnosed with psychological problems. Do you notice this?
Yeah, the statistics came out in 2010 for here in the United States. They found that one out of every five adults in the U.S. are struggling with some sort of mental disorder or illness. Unfortunately, only 39% of those who are diagnosed are getting treatment. So there's a lot of undiagnosed people out there, people who have a diagnosis but are not being treated.
Now, I'm curious to ask you this question. What is the stigma, in your opinion, by a professional, that why a lot of times African-Americans do not want to get treated for mental health issues?
I can answer that myself, but...
Yeah, and I wouldn't limit it to just one particular ethnic group. I mean, there's lots of them, the culture, lots of different ethnic groups, you know, they rely on the family to solve the problems. There's also the, particularly with mental illness, I mean, there's a lot of fear of the unknown. A lot of it is, you know, it's been kind of taboo to seek treatment for any sort of mental illness. And it's really unfortunate because, but that's shifting. It's, you know, getting treatment for going to a psychologist or going to a counselor, it's not just about identifying what's wrong. It's also supposed to be identifying what's working and helping you take that to the next level. So... It is a pervasive kind of stigma against any kind of psychological related treatment.
Yeah, because an African American community, at least I can't speak of other communities, but I can speak of the African American community because I'm part of that. And in our community, you say, hey, man, you need to go talk to a psychologist. I didn't say a psychiatrist. I said a psychologist. Oh, no, I don't do all that. And yet they're walking around with a lot of them with, you know, being manic depressants and bipolar. And I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Or they'll say, okay, you need to go pray on it or go to the church. Or, I mean, the church can actually help you out in some cases. But if you are suffering from a severe mental health issue, you really should go and get help. But there just like you said, there's that stigma. And that's almost thought of as something that is, like, I don't want to sound racial here or racist, but some people say, oh, that's what white people do. Black people aren't supposed to go out and get help.
Yeah, I did 2 years work in East Palo Alto. Are you guys familiar with that place in the Bay Area?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's one of the poorest areas in the Bay Area of California. And worked with kids through the school system, all minority populations. And the best approach was like, oh, the teachers send them because they acted out in class. They send them to a counselor. It wasn't so much about like, you're here because you did something wrong. You're here because you needed a break from class. You're stressed. Let's go hang out, shoot some basketball. And then, you know, if you want to talk about anything, then we'll do that. So you approach this, again, this is a way to approach it. It's not because there's something wrong with you. It's because you might be having a hard time, and there's probably a lot of things you're doing right. So let's identify that so you can do right most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that's a better way of approaching this, to let people know that, you know, as I said just a minute ago, it's not about strictly about working with the problems.
Well, you know, Dr. Wilson, I like to, I stay in the news, you know, that's part of what I do on YouTube. And, you know, we just, in the black community, we just keep seeing this epidemic with the single parent household. And the biggest problem that we see is just the situation with these children being raised with single mothers and not having a father in their life, or the mother having children with a man that does not even care to be a father or just a thug or whatever. Now, let me ask you a question. What psychological aspects fall on the woman when she chooses to live that sort of lifestyle?
The first thing that popped in my mind was emotional hijacking. It's a concept of when you're so drained that you don't have the capacity to be mindful and make a better response, better informed response in how to engage with your child. You're so emotionally drained, you just react impulsively, and it can be very detrimental because, you know, being a single parent is very taxing. And if you aren't doing things to kind of empty out that stress reservoir, as I like to call it, and practice a little bit of mindfulness, you can be really drained and fatigued. So that's one of the biggest things with being a single parent.
So the mindset that says, you know, I can do it all by myself, I don't need a man, that ideology is very damaging, correct?
Well, partly, I like to think of it, it is empowering that you can do a lot of this on your own, but it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to rely on a man. You should reach out to your intimate social network of friends and family, and we are social creatures by design. Our brain is wired to engage in social interaction. The more we do it in healthy relationships, it has a physiological impact on our body. Our body is healthier when we have more positive, healthy relationships. And likewise with kids, they need that social interaction to develop, I'd say, in a healthier way. So it's single moms. Yeah, that's, if you can find a support network, do it, because you definitely need that break and that support from time to time. And feel good about yourself that if you have a partner, an ex-partner who is not stepping up, you know, that is empowering. But if you have a partner that's reaching out, I would, and wants to help and is in a healthy place, I would really welcome that that support, and know that it's good for your kids as well. And you may have to have a conversation about setting good boundaries and doing the whole co-parenting thing. But I would often ask a single mom who's reacting to her anger towards her ex-partner, you know, and is this really going to be beneficial in the long run if your partner is in a healthy place? You know, is this something that you're reacting that is ultimately going to hurt your children?
And at the end of the day, that's supposed to be about. It's supposed to be making sure. Well, hold on. Let me see. I got to say, are we allowed to chat now? Wait. Anybody can call in at any time. If you would choose to call in or if you want to chat, it's fine. I'll let anybody know the phone line is open, 347-996-3350. Man, put that number in there, Ms. Gabriella, because I just got a question about that. Anyway, Dr. Wilson, now, when it comes to actually disciplining children, I feel every child is different. You can't react with penalties. My son, I can't react the same way I would act with one of my daughters, and each daughter is different. Their minds are different. They are totally different people, every last one of them. So some people, in my opinion, need a little bit more strictness than others. Do you agree?
I agree 100%. If you have a parenting book that says it's the ABCs of parenting and it has all your answers in it, it is not worth a read. Every child is different.
Exactly. I mean, like they say, every man is a world of his own. And like Penis is like, I have one daughter, like, you have to, you know, just be on to her about certain things because she's a little bit more of a harder personality, but she likes to joke with you, she likes to, you know, you take shots at you and stuff, pick on you. You know, that's what she likes to do. Then, you know, I may have another one that I can't do that with. You know, I can play with them, but I have to get at her other ways, you know, like with the discipline. One, you take everything from. Another, you make him just talk to very sternly, and that'll do it. I mean, but for what I mean by society tell people how to raise their children, nobody in society know the personality of your children. So how could they actually tell you how to raise your children?
And I think that's where the problem comes in, is when people are haphazardly throwing out their opinions on what you should do. When I think the most helpful thing, when someone's coming to you, they've had a hard day, it's not telling them what you think the answers are. It's more about creating a space to listen and offer your support when they, you know, when they're willing to ask for it. So that's a big thing, I think, that needs to be taken into consideration.
Now, do you believe kids should be rewarded? Just in other words, these kids in this day and time have iPhone 5, they have laptops, they have tablets, they have all this stuff, literally being spoiled. Do you agree with that mindset of how people are today, and they don't have their children doing no chores at all?
Well, the thing about that is working in a system, parenting isn't like a, you know, a here and there activity. I mean, when you have a child, it involves every aspect of your life, I believe, or at least it should. And setting goals, teaching your child about setting goals and achieving them, continuously learning and wanting to improve your life are good foundations that will lead them to a really great future. The praise reward thing, it can get really complicated with the psychological aspect of it, because we look at when you praise and reward your child, in most cases it's better to praise them for their effort than reward them for completing a task. The reason is it gets into the psychology of intrinsic and extrinsic motivators. People that are motivated by an external thing, such as money or some kind of social status or something like that, the research is very extensive, and it shows how it can lead to decreases in our well-being, high-risk behaviors, a lot of negative things. When you are motivated by your intrinsic motivators, things you do it because you want to do it, because you have an interest, a personal investment in it, it actually increases your well-being. So if you can get your kids to find their intrinsic motivation to do something and praise them for their effort instead of the actual completion or, you know, test score or whatever it may be, they're actually going to have higher well-being and more likely to take on new tasks and more challenging problems. So it's does that come across kind of clearly, or die?
Well, I'm listening to everything that you're saying, Dr. Wilson. It's kind of like saying, listen, you need to praise them for the effort, not so much the reward of it or the completion of, let's say you told them to vacuum the floor, let's say that much. And you're saying if they just doing it on their own, they should be rewarded instead of rewarding them after the task completed the correct way.
Yeah, and praise them for, like, wow, you took your time vacuuming the floor. You did a really good job. I really appreciate it. As opposed to, like, hurry up and vacuum the floor. When you're done, you can get this piece of candy. There's a big difference between those two types of praise and reward. Like I said, the psychology of it shows that, you know, in the long run, if you praise your child from an early age for their effort, it actually has huge positive benefits for their development, both psychologically and physiologically.
Okay, now I'm going to ask you a loaded question.
All right.
Do you feel it's right or wrong to physically discipline your children?
I tend to lean on the side of using the words, and it's part of that is because the use of words helps them to convey their emotional experience, as opposed to just the way the brain's developed is we have the back part of our brain by our brainstem and the neck, and that controls all of our physiological stuff. Then it moves up into the emotional area, which is kind of the middle part of the brain. And then finally, at the very front is where we have all of our cognitive reasoning. And if you look at PTSD, the brain basically shuts down the physical and emotional trauma from being processed cognitively. So when you're physically disciplining your kid, you're actually creating a traumatic experience that may not register cognitively. In addition, children and teenagers don't have the frontal lobe, the cognitive reasoning aspect of their brain, fully developed. So when you and I yell as adults at each other, we get that emotional experience, but we also can process it cognitively. A child or a teenager, when you're yelling at them, that actually triggers a fear and fight or flight response in them, as opposed to being able to hit the cognitive aspects. And the reason I link it to PTSD is because that's a big part of PTSD recovery, is helping them develop what we call a coherent linguistic narrative, giving words to the physiological trauma and the emotional trauma. That's my opinion. But it doesn't say, you know, there's some parents that believe, you know, a single swat on the butt has an emotional impact. And that's what it should. It's not so much about causing pain as it is creating, like, hey, this is something emotional you should be paying attention to. As far as your behavior goes, that it's not appropriate. So there's degrees to it.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, remember earlier when I told you about every child is different?
Yes.
Now, for some children, the talking will work. As I stated earlier about my children, they all are different. But what? Now, how do you handle that child that talking does not work? That they just laugh and just keep continuing to do what you said not to do. Then, since you feel that physical... I'm going to say your opinion, physical discipline has so much negative aspects.
You know, the opinions on this always, it goes back and forth. It's gone back and forth for years. My son has very secure attachment. That's a technical term that we can get into if you're interested. But
So let's get into it. What does it mean? Because we don't want to assume everybody knows.
So at the fundamental level, you have either secure or insecure attachment. And what happens is, if you can cultivate a secure place, a comfortable, stable place for your child to explore himself, the personality of a person, the numbers vary, but on average, it's from 0 to 4 years old, your personality is developing. And that's where we're forming our attachment styles and how we relate to others. And if you don't have a stable, loving, caring home environment with at least one primary caregiver that's there and attending to you, you may not get develop a very secure attachment, and that can range from you having issues in your relationships when you get older, and in severe cases, developing into personality disorders. So when I said parenting is not just a here and there type of thing, it's always there. That's when you're mindful of that, you can help your child develop a secure attachment style to really avoid a lot of these problems that we're seeing down the road when they become adults. And the research is really interesting as far as attachment styles go. They've done some longitudinal studies where they gave an inventory, the adult attachment inventory, and to people when they are children, and then they did it again as adults, and then they gave it to their kids, and they found that the child's attachment issues that were carried over into adulthood were able to predict the attachment issues and problems or deficits of their own children. It's that profound, and that's where this stuff becomes transgenerational, that our traumas and our insecure attachment styles get passed down to our kids. So that's probably a long-winded explanation of attachment style and insecure.
Okay, Ms. Gabrielle, you got anything to add to that? I want to ask Dr. Wilson.
Okay, so do you think that the father went too far in terms of beating the two girls that did the twerking video?
I do, and like I said before, if you are going to spank your child, you do it. I would, I don't condone spanking. I condone the timeout method and the talking method, but you don't need to do it more than once or with that severity or with a weapon. That just amplifies the trauma. I think... he was definitely, I used the term emotionally hijacked. He was definitely working from that kind of mindset. He was upset, and he probably has, if he's having trouble with his daughter's mom, he's got to probably have a lot of other issues and stress that's contributing to it and making it even harder for him to kind of stay focused and centered when dealing with his daughters.
Okay, Dr. Wilson, so you got a caller 678. You on the show?
Oh, what's going on?
What's going on? Got any questions for Dr. Wilson?
My question is as far as, like, if a child continues to get beaten, would it affect the child and the adult later on?
Yes, it actually even has an effect on their DNA.
Oh, really?
Yes, children exposed to trauma. This came out of Duke University recently. Children exposed to intense trauma, their DNA, when our DNA divides, on the end of our DNA strand, on the chromosomes, there's a thing, a piece of nucleotides called the telomeres. And every time a cell divide, or the DNA divides, those telomeres get shorter and shorter and shorter. And when they start to run out, the reason they're there is they prevent the DNA from losing pieces or from getting stuck to other DNA. And they found with kids that are exposed to trauma, their telomeres are rapidly decreased, which is similar to accelerated aging. So exposing your kids to trauma and having traumatic situations can make them age a lot faster. So that's real interesting research. But taking it to the psychological level, exposure to trauma can just have – it floods your system with cortisol. Cortisol is associated with all kinds of mental health issues and physiological issues such as heart disease and cancer. When a kid is constantly in a heightened anxious state, it has a big impact on these the physical and mental health of the child.
Never knew that. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because, you know, Dr. Wilson, listen, like I said, the times I got in trouble, I needed it. And I'm not going to lie with you. I needed the time. And, you know what, I appreciate every time I got in. It was not abusive. You know, no one cut blood. No one put me in a hospital or bruised me or whatever. But I was the type of kid that talking wouldn't work with me. You talk to me and I go right back and do it. Until you put that belt on me, that's when I quit. So what I'm saying is, for those children that who are like that, I mean, you still feel that all it would have an effect on them later in life? Because to me, I feel I'm a better man for it.
Yeah, I think you have to start early. You know, the personality is developing from 0 to 4, mm-hmm. and continues to evolve over time. So if you can start early and create a healthy attachment style with your child early on, and really get to know your child, you can develop a rapport with your child to where you're able to discipline them, and you can even just give them a look, and they know that that's time to cut it. So it's not saying that you were necessarily a bad parent, and now you have to, you've messed up your kid, and now you have to spank them to get them to focus. It may just take some time to really sit down and really get to know them and discuss what they're, give them a, help them generate the capacity to express themselves emotionally and start to self-regulate. I think a lot with kids is the thing I tell parents, one of the most important things is consistency and stability. Create a stable environment where they can explore, but know that you're always there to catch them when things start to get rough. Mm-hmm. And that can lead to secure attachment. And consistency is, particularly with disciplining, if you're going to spank them for the same time and same severity for the same thing. You know, you do not want to change that up, because that leads to potentially to insecure attachment styles as well as a heightened level of anxiety. They don't know when they're going to get punished for doing this and when they're not. So,
yeah, I can definitely agree with that, because, you know, the situation with stability, you know, you need to have your kids in a stable environment, just your family in general, just human beings. They want to be in a good, stable environment. And, you know, also, you know, the security of having a good household and the consistency, like you stated, you know, if it's no today, it's no tomorrow. And you shouldn't have the kid trying to play one on the other, you know, like when you have parents, you got to be on the same, you know, level. That's why when the kids try, well, I'm going to ask dad. I'm like, no, your mama said no is no. Mm-hmm. You know, and it gets to a lot of that. You know, well, I'm going to ask my dad because he may be a little more soft on me because I'm a girl. Versus mom, she's not.
Yeah, and that's where you have to, even if you're divorced or separated, if you have kids with someone else, you need to have a healthy conversation about how you're going to co-parent. What are the rules? It's not leave your own personal issues with this person out of it and think about it. It's strictly about your kids.
Right.
My brother on the phone, you got kids?
No, I don't. I don't have any.
Don't have any yet? Oh, shoot, so you're just trying to take in this information before you have some, huh?
Right.
Yeah, man, thanks. Because, man, I tell you what, having kids is great. But, you know, I believe this. if you start early, getting the kids in line early, okay, you like right. Dr. Wilson said, you don't have to be doing all that stuff later. Because like my daughters, I don't have to do anything like that. I just have to talk to them or look at them because they already know what's required of them. Like my son, when he first started, you know, long time ago, the first time I ever disciplined my son when he was 2 years old because he got upset and called himself trying to hit me. Well, that didn't end well for him. And he's never did that since. You get what I'm saying? But you got to let kids know, like, this is my parenting style. First, I'm going to talk to you. I'm going to let you know what you did was wrong and explain it to you and make sure you understand what you did was wrong and why it's wrong. I don't believe in just coming and hauling off and hitting the kids. That's not right because they don't know what they did. Now, if they do it again, then, okay, I told you the first time. I made sure you understood it. Now I'm coming with it different ways. It's going to be some suffering now. Now, suffering don't always be hitting you. Suffering could be I'm going to take everything from you. You're not, you know, like if you like that tablet so much, well, I'm going to take the tablet from you. That's true. I'm going to take you out of, you know, cheerleading, gymnastics, football, whatever you like. I'm going to take you out of it. That's another way, you know, of doing whatever. I always tell parents this, when the kids get older, you got to come up with creative ways to make them suffer.
And on that note, too, it's also important to remind yourself to praise them when they are doing things correctly. Oftentimes we think of it as just like they're either doing okay or they're messing up, and we're just going to acknowledge when they're messing up. It's the results show that if you praise them more, they're less likely to do something that they're not supposed to do.
I agree.
So.
Now, they got a comment in here from There Is No Show Show. So I still with my kids. I would like for you to call the show if you can, because I would like to know. Why you still whip your kids? I'm with you. I get on mine, too, if I got to. But they're at a point I don't have to do that anymore because they're older. I can look at them certain ways. Like I said, I don't believe in, like, a 13-year-old. I'm going to start whipping on them. I'm just not going to do that.
Yeah.
No.
In my opinion, I just think that once they get to a certain age, it doesn't even make any sense to hit them anymore.
Right.
I think, like, once they're, like, it doesn't make any sense for you to be in high school and your parents are still hitting you. Because at that point, sometimes it can even become abuse. Because, I myself, I can count all the beatings I've had on one hand. Because my parents didn't really believe in spanking. Because I'm just too sensitive for that, to be honest with you. So, I'm actually really curious about what this person wanted to say about whooping their children. Because I've noticed that a lot in the Black community, a lot of people are so... Like, their first response is, think now and ask later, you know, instead of actually trying to get to the root of the problem and sitting down and talking to the children and explaining why they're getting hit. Because, you know, there's some parents who will just, like, if you just look at them funny, they'll smack you, you know, and they think that that's what they're supposed to do because that's how they were raised. They were raised that if a child does something you don't want them to do, you hit them. And they don't understand why that leads to people having an emotional problem.
But that method is wrong because, like, I was hit, but I was told the first time I did something, hey, what you did is wrong, and this is why it's wrong, and I was made to understand why I was wrong. So when I got hit, I knew why I got hit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so you hauling off, throwing shoes at people, hitting people with a broomstick and anything else right off the back, and the kid don't know, like, what did I do? Like that, you know, it's like, I think that's wrong. Don't you agree, Dr. Wilson?
Yeah, now imagine a child who doesn't have the cognitive reasoning skills as an adult, like an adult does, and they have this heightened limbic system that's firing all these crazy emotions, and all they see is, with no explanation, a shoe coming at them. That is just going to heighten their anxiety. And if it happens randomly, they're always going to be, they're like, you know, skittish about being around this adult. When are they going to get hit or when are they not going to get hit?
Exactly. You know, and also another thing that there's something I don't agree with. I'm talking about what I don't agree with. I don't believe if a woman or a man, but a lot of times I see this with the women, the single mother dating this new boyfriend, I don't believe your boyfriend should be putting his hands on your children. Because my attitude is if he didn't make that kid, he has no right to put his hands on him. Now, what's your opinion about that, Dr. Wilson?
Well, again, I'm on the bias of you do the timeouts with disciplining, you shouldn't do the physical. I think, first of all, If a mom's just dating, it's I think it's best to only introduce the her potential new partner after they are committing to a serious relationship. Otherwise, it can create a lot of instability in the household and possibly not the best modeling for what healthy relationships should be. So with that, if it becomes a serious relationship, there should be a conversation between mom and the new partner about what she is willing to let his involvement within raising the children. Because potentially it could become their new stepdad. And there are cases where the new stepdad is better than the birth father. So it just takes some sorting out the details and time and again, being mindful of these healthy ways to discipline and encourage your children.
I see, but me and my wife discussed that. We did. And I just don't believe in, like, even if, sometimes some women will say to a man, no, you go ahead because they don't have a man in their life and this and that. But the thing is, that is like a minefield you're playing with if you come into a situation with a woman. And what if this man hits this child a certain way and the woman's get very upset? Now this guy is locked up in jail or anything else. And I always tell guys, don't you put your hands on those kids. You tell their mama about it. And if it's so bad and that child's so unruly and you can't deal with the situation, it's better you walk off from that than get involved in something and now you're sitting up in jail behind a child, you know, that's not even yours to begin with.
Yeah, that's a horrible situation.
But a lot of guys have gotten caught, or some of these guys or the women have allowed to hit them, they'll beat these children with so much, anger or whatever, because they're not their child, so they don't have that attachment to that child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
I mean, there's been cases where the man has beat the child to death.
Mm.
Plenty of them I've put up. You know, I remember I did one story about a child that messed up a DVD player. The mom was at school. She in college. The guy at home with the child. He beat the child to death behind him messing up a DVD player.
Wow.
You know, and this is the things I'm talking about. And some people just really don't need to be putting their hands on kids. I that part, you know, some of that what you say about not touching the kids, whipping them or whatever, I agree with some of that. You know, like I said before in my video commentary, I think he should not have whipped them with that kind of anger, and I don't believe you should discipline your children when you're angry. Because mm-hmm. when you're angry, you're going to swing. And I'm going to say me. When I'm upset, I get much stronger when I'm upset than I do when I'm calm. So when he thinks I'm not really hitting him hard, he could be killing him.
Yeah. And
you know what I'm
saying? I come in with the mindful parenting is parents need to be practicing mindfulness, checking in. When I mean mindfulness is being in the present moment, observing what's happening, your thoughts and your emotions. And when you do that check-in, even just having that brief check-in can actually help you or prevent you from making a rash decision you're probably going to regret. So the mindful parenting, you know, can help you be a better parent as well as get you to a place where you can really enjoy being a parent, because there are so many positive things about being a parent, down to the physiological connection of, you know, oxytocin being released when you hug your kid. And oxytocin is going to make you, it increases your chances for finding happiness and positivity in the moments that you're sharing with your child.
Now, there's a comment came in, Dr. Wilson, and said, I was beaten as a child with metal and wooden objects such as kitchen spoons for trivial things like lying to my mother, losing my house keys or something. No reason at all. She took her frustrations out on me. And they say, I am now seeing a psychologist because of anxiety disorder.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And they're still typing. What do you think about that so far, Dr. Will?
It makes a lot of sense. You know, it explains, you know, or goes along the lines with what I've been saying about how this kind of insecure attachment and this anxiety from not knowing when you're going to get hit or having an understanding of why you're getting hit can lead to a permanent heightened level of trait anxiety.
Yeah, I mean, because losing house keys, you know, if like, for instance, my daughters, for instance, they had lost a house key one time or whatever, and I said, hey, where your keys at? And we gave them both keys. And like, I don't know this and that. And I've not once, or even their mother, not once has ever swung at them for losing a house key. You know, we either you find it or you, we make them tear the house up, that's where it's at in the house, and get or get another key. But you don't, you know, hit them. And if they just throwing stuff at you for, you know, trivial things, and then this person also saying that they have issues socializing and keeping a job as well due to all of that. So actually, they're, and especially if their mother took out their frustrations on them, this is a lot of times what happens to kids in a single parent household. And that's I've seen it too many times. You know, the child look like the mother, or, I mean, or look like the father a lot of times, and right. The mother take it out on them. And this happens a lot to our boys, more than the girls. I'm sorry, it does. The boy look like the father.
I did, however, witness an experience where the single dad was with his daughter,
mm-hmm.
and she was throwing a temper tantrum in the room, and she hit him, and his immediate reaction was, "You're so much like your mom." That was awful.
But yeah, Dr. Wilson, you could. But did he hit her?
He did not hit her because he was in front of me. So
okay. In my opinion, like Dr. Wilson, I think probably what he meant by that just you know, because I've dealt with, you know, with the separation thing, the divorce thing, and all the other stuff. Your children have traits of you, and or possibly they could be just like the other one. And let's say if his ex was a violent, they want to swing when she can't, you know what I'm saying, his daughter's swinging just like her, I would understand that. Because some things that my ex would do every once in a while, my son would do. And I'm like, oh, my God, this kid's like his mother on certain things. But most of the time, she's telling him, you know, you're just like your father, which he is.
And I'm not denying that that's probably true. The problem is, though, the message that's being conveyed to the daughter and how she may end up looking at her mom, if this is continuously reinforced, you know, it's implanting the negative message about her mom, as well as, you know, leading to a potential conflicted relationship with her dad. So that's why I said it. In addition to, it's not just men, you know, or women with their boys. It can go both ways. So just throwing out a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Gabrielle, got anything you want to add?
No, not for this one.
Not for this one, Gabrielle is silent on this. Well, mm-hmm. Like I said, trust me, that I can go all day on that topic about, you know, how. Now, let me ask you a question. When you have one parent trying to literally poison the children against the other parent, what psychological damage that could do to the children?
I mean, like we've kind of been touching upon, it's, you know, it's going to create a conflicted relationship between the mom and the child and the father. And the child may potentially be in a position to where they'll, you know, really cunning kids may play the parents against each other to get what they want. And, you know, that's cultivating a very manipulative child. Other things are, it's the children, they're really keen on picking up the subtle messages of things. They may not understand the cognitive aspects of it, but they're very intuitive emotionally. And so that can actually potentially disrupt, deregulate the child's emotional state. You know, if the child's identifying with dad and really has a good time with dad, yet mom's always saying that dad's bad, that's very, very confusing. And again, it just contributes to the anxiety that a child would have.
And see, you know, like my issue with Dr. Wilson, like let's say with my son, he lives with his mother. And I have a certain way of, I discipline a certain way. I believe in talk first. We got to have a certain structure, and it works well, and it keeps everything in order. His mom let him basically just get away with anything. All he got to do is beg her for stuff. And she's like, oh, here, take it. So we don't have the same level of discipline. So I tell him, well, would you like to live with me? He said, no, you're too strict.
And how did that make you feel? What was your reaction to that?
How it made me feel was, yeah, your mama let you get away with anything, and you know I would not. I mean, it's a lot of things that's happened to my son. If you saw my son before, when he lived with me, to now, I mean, you would really get upset probably, you know, with his mom. I mean, even just physically. Because I believe in, you know, feeding kids, you know, good healthy foods, kids being in activities, kids, you know, not just sitting in the room all day playing games. That's not really a right way to live.
How many hours of sleep is he getting?
I'm going to say when he come with me, he'll go to bed at, let's say, around 9, and he'll get up like about 7:30. He gets up early.
Okay. Kids really need about, the younger kids really need about at least 9 hours sleep. So that's a big thing that, you know, when you look at everything, it's the health and well-being. Sleep's often kind of like looked over. So that's why I asked that. It's important to acknowledge.
Because he was his right weight when he was with me, and he really gained some weight after the divorce. And wow. His mom really let him eat whatever he wanted. I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I control it. You know, he even know that. You say, oh, no, I know his dad. He's not going to let me eat anything I want. I say, exactly. I say, because that's not, you know, a healthy thing. But his mom, she let him do what he wants. And that's been a big problem.
There might also be a possibility. This is me playing psychologist here. The possibility that he's getting emotionally placated or soothed by eating food because mm-hmm. he wasn't getting the emotional support from his mom. That's something to look into because kids do that. They self-soothe by certain things such as eating if they don't have the support from the primary caregiver.
Yeah, you know, I know adults do that as well. Like some of them, mm-hmm. you know, stress eat or, you know, like I told my wife, I'm the complete opposite. If I start stressing, I don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my wife has said the same thing, said, well, he's probably a stress eater. Maybe he, you know, like you said, he felt comfort, you know, in eating food. So do you feel like with kids with divorce, I mean, like, do you really think they need to talk to someone, like have a psychologist or whatever, just to get their feelings out, or what do you think about that?
Well, the primary thing that mostly happens is the kids blame themselves for the separation in some way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think it's important. And another thing is, it's funny, like, you can't do psychotherapy with your family and your loved ones. It just doesn't work. It's something about having a kind of like a third party be able to create a space for you to process your emotions and reflect on it that's effective. So I do think, and maybe I'm biased because I'm in the field, but I think at least going to a counselor to talk about the process, to help the child process it, because the child might not want to talk about it, and the parents might not be in a place to want to talk about it. So that's an emotional experience that's not being processed, and it's just sitting with the kid. So I always suggest, if you are doing a separation, at least go to a couple sessions of counseling for the child to kind of process what is going on, see if they have any understanding or questions or confusion, and most importantly, not to blame themselves.
Yeah, because that sort of thing is, you know, definitely hard on children, especially when you got parents arguing. Even though the states, you know, make you take parenting classes and they tell you, you know, don't, you know, talk bad about the other one, don't, you know, be, you know, together on discipline, co-parenting, all this stuff. With you, you know, it's a state, you know, mandatory if you're going to go through a divorce that you have to take a parenting class.
Yeah, and if you are, like, as a parent, I know it's a lot of emotions and a lot of anger that you're holding, and you want to get it out. You need to get it out. You shouldn't just hold it all in. Don't do that. So, but don't vent it to your child. Go call your girlfriends up or call your buddies up and vent to them. It's interesting. Men actually, when they're stressed, they become more social. They used to think they get angry and stuff, but guys nowadays are actually becoming more social. So it's really great. They need
I agree
to reach
with
out
you.
And have their. It doesn't even matter like if they're right or wrong. Your friends, you know, that are there to support you, just have them listen to you vent about how ridiculous all this is and how hard it is, and that will give you an outlet to not take it out on your kids.
Yeah, because after that situation, you know, I had this really some issues, and a friend of mine said, why don't you come out here to Los Angeles? You've never been. Shoot, just come on out and hang out. I'll take you to Vegas, this, that, and the third. And that was the best 2 weeks of my life. I got all that. I forgot all that mess. And when I finally came back home, I wasn't even stressed about nothing. I was good. As long as I could just travel. That's what I tell anybody. Just travel. Just go to Vegas. Go somewhere. Go to L.A. Do something. You know, don't sit around the house worrying about something that you can't change.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I'm happy you had that experience.
Well, I'm happy I had that experience, too, because, you know, that turned me into a Southwest Airlines fool. I love flying. You know, getting out there on the West Coast in Vegas, they never go to sleep out there. It was awesome. You know, I was like a kid in the candy store. But, you know, some people don't realize it's a change of environment, a change of scenery into a new place. Sometimes it's just really good to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel the stress and the, the problems that you would feel if you stay at home.
Yeah, that's why I personally try to at least travel out of state every couple of months if I can, just because I do need that change of scenery. But, or at least to get out of the house, because I've noticed a lot of people that suffer from depression that don't leave the house a lot. And they don't understand how sitting in the house makes them, like, almost makes their situation worse.
Yeah, that's the, like, probably the basic, you know, prescription for depression is if someone's depressed, the number one thing you first get them doing is get out and be active, get them exercising, get them out of, you know, the dark room. And that often has helps to lift the depression somewhat. So, yeah, so if you are depressed, you see yourself start isolating and being solitude indoors, just whatever energy you can muster up, get outside and be active.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's no reason sitting around depressed. I tell people, you ain't going to change the situation just feeling sorry for yourself. You need to get up, get out, and shoot, have a good time. That's what I tell people. Should go out and just, I'm not saying you got to use drugs or nothing, but just enjoy yourself. Shoot. Get around your friends. There's no reason in that. And I don't think nobody should have to medicate you to make you realize that. That's just my opinion.
So do you want to know, like, do you want to discuss some of the options, like the positive ways to handle some of this stuff to develop a healthy bond with your child?
Yeah. Let us know how we can do that.
Okay. So as I've been saying, a lot of this is new research. As they've been able to study the brain and its development, and a lot of it's coming out of California, UCLA, with Dan Siegel's work on interpersonal neurobiology, basically how our brains are wired to one another and how we can share emotions and attune to one another. And when we're connected and attuned to our child, a lot of interesting things happen in our brains that cause us to release a lot of the feel-good chemicals, such as oxytocin, as I mentioned earlier. And these actually activate different parts of the brain that can cultivate healthy development and, in the long run, increase the functionality of systems associated with positive emotions, cognitive reasoning, emotional regulation. And when I say attunement, that's about engaging, looking your kid in the face, lots of hugs and kisses. It's about connecting with your child. And I know so many parents are like, yeah, I spent time with my kid. I was working on the computer while they were playing on the floor. That's not spending the healthy attachment kind of style time together. It's about engaging. Babies are very, very perceptive to facial features, even more so than the words themselves at first. So they've shown children where they did a study. I can't remember where this one was done, but they had a mom and a baby face each other, her infant. Then the mom would be smiling, the baby would be smiling, and then they had mom put on a stoic, like, blank face. And the babies, a lot of them got upset. Some of them even threw up because they were so emotionally deregulated by mom showing no emotion. So it's that powerful. And when it comes to parenting, there's the one book, I think I mentioned it on The Guy Spot, which is another podcast that I've been on a handful of times, but it's a book called Brain-Based Parenting, and it talks about the neuroscience of healthy caregiving. It's not the ABCs of parenting, but it talks about how the child's brain works and how you can and how your brain works and how you can cultivate a healthy bond. And they have an acronym for the one way you can engage, or the four ways you can engage with your child, and it's called PACE, P-A-C-E. That stands for playfulness, acceptance, curiosity, and empathy. So when you engage with your child, my go-to is often playfulness. My son, I'll pick him up from school, I ask him how his day was, and he's like, it's the worst day ever. You know, he didn't get the candy that, you know, some other kid got the candy, and he's all upset about it. And I have a relationship with him to where I can just give him a funny look, and he starts laughing. And then I ask him, so, like, well, maybe I say, maybe you'll get one tomorrow, you know, if you do what you're supposed to do, or you finish first, or whatever it may be. And I have him explain his emotional response and how he thought about it. So these, the playfulness, acceptance, curiosity, and empathy. It allows you to connect with your kid on different levels and cultivate that healthy attachment and attunement. And I'm giving a very, very brief kind of overview of this, which is why I recommend this book. I have nothing to do with this book. This is just in my studies, probably some of the latest and best parenting book, one of the latest and best parenting books out there.
Now, when kids have behavior issues, I'm highly against medicating children. I'm highly against that. Do you think that's necessary?
I definitely think it's us as a culture, we're over-medicated. You know, it used to be ADHD, and then it became the autism spectrum. Interestingly enough, I don't know, probably most people that aren't in the psychological community know this, but they're not having the separate you know, Asperger's, pervasive developmental disorder, or autism. They're turning into a spectrum because the features are so complex and different for each child. And I really like that. I think it's a good idea, and I think it will help to potentially regulate some of the diagnoses for the autism spectrum kids.
Okay. Well, Ms. Gabriella, now when it comes to the children, you're talking about the medication, and you know how some of these people are trying to just scam to get medication. You heard about them doing that?
Yeah, I've heard about people abusing the system to get medication. That happens a lot, actually.
You know, trying to say their kids, you know, need a, like we would say, crazy check. That's the way we would say it back home. Trying to say your kids need a crazy check to get benefits.
Mm-hmm.
Get their kids on this medication. Like, how are they getting diagnosed? Well, just because a child, like, you know, they say, oh, the child got behavior problems, he needs medication. Like, why do, you know, Dr. Wilson, they just giving them medication like that just because they say got behavior problems?
I mean, it's the same thing with the pain management clinics, you know, that they're just pill mills that are pumping it out. The doctor gets more money for, you know, writing that script. It's unfortunate, and there is a thorough process to evaluate a child for something like ADHD, and it does involve talking to the teachers, doing some assessments, some observations. A doctor, I'm hesitant. Maybe I'm biased again because I'm a psychologist, but I don't think it's okay for a pediatrician or a general practitioner, MD, to just listen to them and say, oh, he's acting up in class. Okay, well, here's some Adderall. I think that's poor practice.
Now, that I agree with you. Now, I want to ask you a question about the girls that was whipped by the father, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Since the mother got him thrown in jail, he was charged with, you know, child abuse and corporal punishment, okay? That's what his charges. How do you think the girls would feel about their father since the mother has, you know, went that route? It's, you know, it was a viral video. Everybody know it was them. I mean, this is like being aired out on the worst way possible. I mean, how do you think the girl's mindset would be then?
I mean, okay, this is my personal opinion and not like professionally, I'd say, advised opinion. I think knowing like my personal experiences on that, in having difficult situations like that where one parent puts another one against the other, it's going to be, because their dad is removed from the situation, all they have is mom. So they're going to have a lot of mixed feelings because they're obviously probably going to be mad at dad and both miss dad. But they're also probably going to be upset with mom for putting that all out there. But they're living with mom right now. So there's going to be a lot of conflicted emotions.
Okay, so do you think in they possibly can have a hatred toward their mother? For let's say her father, you know, their father actually gets some jail time behind this, and they knew they was wrong or whatever, and that's, but still, I mean, do you think they would hate their mother in the end behind getting their father put in jail like that?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you know, I don't know their background or anything like that, and I'm based on this, the extent that their mom went through with, I'm imagine this isn't the first situation where she's jeopardized the well-being of her children just to get back at dad. And the more, if mom keeps going over and over and over again, jeopardizing her children's well-being just to get back at dad, I imagine eventually those kids are going to build up some resentment because in the end, they're the ones being affected just so mom can get back at dad. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that makes plenty of sense, and that's sad. And, you know, the problem with some of that is that some of these kids grow up with a resentment later in their life. And I'm going to speak from a guy's aspect. Me and Ms. Gabrielle can speak on a woman's aspect. But there are guys who actually grew up, and they hate, you know, the opposite sex, for instance, in their own race, especially if a woman resembles anything in type of personality like their mother. And a lot of times they'll date women and actually see their mother in these women. And a lot of times they go into I hate, you know, for instance, black women. I hate black women. And they're really adamant that they hate black women. And a lot of times it stems from their mother. And a lot of times I know it is a mother issue more so than the issue of the women that they were actually dating. Now, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's. I like to say it's not so much that you're. Let's say as a guy, you're going to marry someone who's like your mom to fix all the mommy issues you have. I think it's more about you get into relationships with people who remind you or have the potential to enact the behaviors of people from your past and early childhood whom you had a lot of difficulty with, whether it be mom or dad or aunt, uncles or sibling. It's funny why we do this. It's almost at an unconscious level. We get into we're trying to reenact and engage in situations that we hold emotional trauma from and unresolved conflict from our past. And so if we can find a partner who's going to allow us to project all of our mommy issues or all of our daddy issues, we seem to just have an innate drive to find those people and connect with them. So, and then perpetuate these projections, and it leads to conflicted relationships until we hopefully resolve them, which is also why, have you ever heard of it described as it's a different person but the same relationship? If you don't work on your stuff and resolve some of your early issues, attachment issues, you're going to find someone, it's a different person, but the relationship ends up being the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is that people date the same kind of person?
It's a similar person, or it's really interesting how they can get their partner to behave similarly to an ex or something, you know, their mom or their dad in certain situations. And that goes into our attachment styles and how we relate to one another.
Mm-hmm.
So,
hey, give me a second, Dr. Wills. Human paradox. I see you call back, brother. You want to chime in?
Hey, yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, brother.
Yeah, my phone is screwed up. I had to hang up. Call back. I had a couple of things I wanted to get Dr. Wilson's opinion. First of all, this is more of a just me ranting. The first thing is I think a lot of us black folks, I'm 33 years old, and it seems like a lot of the more old school people in the black community, we have sort of a Stockholm syndrome where we feel like, hey, you know, mom beat the crap out of us with a broomstick. I turned out okay. And we don't really identify that that was really abuse. You know, and I hear people say, particularly black people say, oh, well, these kids, they just need their ass beat. And, you know, like y'all were saying earlier, past a certain age, it's really counterproductive. Really, you're just doing it for yourself after, I don't know what the age is, 8 years old or 10 years old. But after that point, you know, you're really, it's counterproductive to kids. The other thing I want to point with the saying, I left a comment on your video when you posted this advice show is, when you beat girls, and this is just my opinion, Dr. Wilson, you can verify this or deny it. But when you beat girls in particular or shame them for doing things that are sexual in nature, doesn't that have the opposite effect as far as often making them more? There's always the saying that the preacher's daughter is the most wild, that sort of thing. Doesn't that come from instead of educating them and talking to them about sexual things, trying to use shame? Shame tactics, or even disciplining them for doing things that are sexual, even young kids, you know, instead of finding out, you know, I've heard
I've read cases where, you know, it was this case about Dr. Wilson. You heard about the case about that 5-year-old girl that was performing sexual favors on the kids.
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it was a couple of months ago. She was performing oral sex on 2 4-year-old boys at school. And when I was reading in the comments when they were I think it was on Yahoo or whatever, you know, people were saying, "Oh, I beat the crap out of my girl," and I'm like, well, you know, maybe she's been abused or something. Like, someone needs to find out what's going on. It's got to be something.
Yeah, but
when
they're that young, that's usually observed behavior.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. But Dr. Wilson, even as a teenager, do you think that beating, let's say, a teenage girl for doing something sexual, do you think that can have an opposite effect as far as making them even more sneaky, you know, and maybe hypersexual?
Yeah, I haven't come across any studies that have verified that, but what I have observed is it's more along that, you know, when I was talking about the pace, the behaviors you can engage in to cultivate healthy attachment, one of those is acceptance.
Right.
A lot of repressed behaviors or emotions or thoughts, you end up like engaging in them because you're trying to push against them. It's reactionary. So when you can have an open conversation with your children about sexuality and educate them, they're going to be curious, of course.
Right.
And to work with them on accepting certain things, it'll be less reactionary. That's just coming from what I know. Again, there is no study that I've come across.
Okay.
But it is interesting, though. There is – I have worked in communities that were very – there was a lot of – religion was a big part of this in this area of the country, and there were a lot of extremes. You know, there was extreme, like on one end it was very religious, and then at the opposite end, these people were also engaging in very taboo sexual acts.
Wow.
Yeah, so there is something to that. It's like, to me, it's about balance. One extreme versus the next extreme, you know, either one is not good. And it seems that
right.
to manifest that way when you are repressing things.
Wow. That's interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for that. You know, that is my thing. I'm a person that I don't have children, but I'm all for corporal punishment to a degree, as a last resort, really. Of course, that video where this guy beat his children with a TV cord, you know, that's over the top. And just judging from some of the comments that I've read, it seems, like I said, in the black community, there's a lot of Stockholm Syndrome going on. Well, we really don't see abuse as abuse. So I just wanted to weigh in and see what you thought about that. But I appreciate the chance to talk to you and also your advice show. And Miss Gabriella.
Yeah, brother.
And I'll go, no problem. And I'll go back silent just to listen. To the rest of the show.
All right, thanks, bro. For your questions.
No problem.
All righty. So now let me ask you a question, Dr. Wilson, in relation to psychologists versus psychiatrists. I mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, when I was told what you do is actually talk out the problem, and what the other one do is talk out the problem but medicate you. Is that the simple way of putting it?
It is, but it might be a little bit more and more psychiatrists are just, they're not even talking about the problem. They're just writing the scripts. And that's poor practice. They need to spend some time. I know people that they're in and out in 10 minutes with their psychiatrist, and that's not long enough, I think, to make informed diagnoses and to prescribe accurately. But the problem is, again, it lies in the healthcare system. Psychiatrists taking insurance, they'd make the same amount of money in a 10-minute consult as they would in a 50-minute therapy session. So from their perspective, why not see 4 or 5 people in an hour as opposed to one and make 4 or 5 times the amount of money?
Wow. So you say basically what they're doing is a lot of, not all, but a lot of psychiatrists basically just hustling the insurance.
In a way, yeah. I know of in town in Austin, there are some amazing psychiatrists they sit down, they talk to their patients, they find out what's going on. They often work in conjunction with me doing more, you know, so we have letters that we have the patient sign that allow me and their psychiatrist to speak, share information. But if you're seeing a psychiatrist and they're only talking to you for 5 or 10 minutes, you may want to get a referral or find another psychiatrist. It's poor practice to do it that way.
Gabriella, got anything you need to add to that?
No.
Miss Gabriella, Miss Gabriella, let me ask you a question. I got to ask you a question. Now, you hear me? Okay, I was wondering. When it comes, do you think that more people should actually talk to people like Dr. Wilson when they just have like a issue that they just can't like figure out? I mean, from the woman's standpoint, you know how women have these traumatic breakups sometime, or they don't get why they have these issues about themselves. I mean, because women have a lot of underlying issues that, as men, we feel that they need to talk to somebody about. I mean, you want to explain on that?
Yeah, I actually feel that women should go out and seek either a counselor, a psychiatrist, or whatever, because we mentioned this earlier, how people will get into a relationship and then even though it'll be a different person, it'll be the same pattern. There's been a lot of women who, there's this statement that a lot of women make where they'll say, I only seem to attract losers, or I only seem to attract men that treat me wrong, or they cheat on me, or they do this and this and that. And they don't understand why it is that they somehow continue the same behavior patterns that sometimes lead a man to behave a certain way. For example, if a woman has been cheated on a lot, she may do things that might end up driving the man to cheat or to just not even want to invest in the relationship because she can act very insecure. Like, you know, treating the man like she might meet a man and go on a date with him. And then from the first date, she might start saying certain things that indicate that she doesn't trust him or that she feels like he doesn't have good intentions. And they don't understand, like a lot of women don't know where all that's coming from, and they don't know how to deal with that hurt.
What's coming up for me right now is two psychologists I work with in town here who specialize in couples work and the psychology of love. You may be interested in having them on too, because that's all right up their alley.
Oh, really? It's called Psychology of Love?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but, yeah. Email. Yeah, I'm just finding out. Email you about the information and see what they talk about. Because.
But anyways, yeah, it's all too common issue that we just perpetuate the same problems in one relationship to the next until we find them, and I go back again, like what we said earlier in the show is what I was saying about how psychology is not just strictly about fixing what's wrong. It's helping you to identify what's right. And from that perspective, all of us can use a little help in identifying, you know, the strengths that we have and where, you know, where our ambitions are and how we can get there.
Well, also, you know, what I don't understand, you keep bringing this up about somebody dating the same kind of person. I mean, is there something within them that keeps them stuck from, like, wanting to go out and talk to other people? I mean, it's something with them.
It is. And it's, I think, in my opinion, it's they're trying to resolve an early conflict, whether it's emotional or relationship-wise. They're trying to replay it. It's kind of weird. I don't have the numbers on me, because I didn't look this up, but there's this real interesting correlation between women who have been sexually assaulted who end up having a lot of promiscuity afterwards. And it's kind of surprising. I think part of that is, in a way, I'm not an expert in this area, but part of it, I think, is they're trying to generate a situation to where that sexual encounter can be a pleasant, positive one, as opposed to a re-traumatization.
Yeah, you've heard that, because I remember, like, I was watching DJ Vlad the other day, and he had a adult film star Pinky, for those guys who know who Pinky is, and she had talked about that her father had molested her, and when she was a child, and yet Pinky, that's why all she does is pornography. So, you know, you would think, like you said, they would have a traumatic experience like that. That would be the last thing that a woman like that would want to do. But yet, she's known all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And she widely noted that her own father molested her.
I see that a lot in adult entertainers, though. A lot of them, like, I don't want to sit there and criticize the whole adult entertainment community, but I've no, like, if you actually sit down and talk to a lot of them, there's a lot of them that have the same story. I was molested as a kid, or I was exposed to sex at a young age, and now this is why I do what I do.
Yeah, humans are fascinating why we do these things. And like I said, I think a lot of it may be at some unconscious level. So.
And a lot of the things also the media put out there as well, you know, with these, I mean, do you notice a lot of times in the way they advertise and the way they put things out? I mean, do you believe in, like, sometimes they doing suggestive things of sending messages through stuff that maybe it's going to reach your subconscious versus just actually what you hear?
Oh, of course there's a lot of subtleties. I mean, advertising's full of it. I mean, it's a lot of this can... I think a lot of it's in the pop psychology. Like, there'll be an interesting, fun study to see, you know, the effects of one thing just because it's kind of cute or humorous. For example, people like shaking hands. If I shake your hand and then I touch you on your upper shoulder, studies, research shows that you would have more trust in me initially. So I have buddies who got into psychology, and they joke around. They say they got into psychology to learn how to manipulate people, which, I mean, there is some subtleties that can convey certain messages.
So I mean, are you familiar with Nicki Minaj?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you think she's influencing so many people would look trying to look like a Barbie? It's looking ridiculous.
That's too complicated for me to even touch. I don't know.
what's the simplistic part of it that you can touch on?
She's selling a good product.
She's selling a good product to the point that everybody want to do it.
A very popular product.
Well, do you think she has some sort of mental issues, or she's just a genius?
Well, you can be both. That's for sure. And surprisingly, there is a lot of mental illness with geniuses. But from the, you know, I'm not completely immersed, or, you know, I don't work a lot with famous actors or rock stars, but I have worked and engaged with people in music industry and actors, and they all, a lot of them are very attention seeking, which makes them really good performers. We call it histrionic is the condition. But that's what makes them so great, is they're really good at getting themselves out there.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is someone who we would label an attention whore, a medical term would be histrionic?
It's a personality trait, or in a severe case, it's a disorder. It's histrionic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Ms. Gabrielle, why were you laughing when I said that?
The whole Nicki Minaj thing. Well, to be honest with you, she's not really the one dressing herself, so you can't really. I mean,
she's not dressing herself.
I mean, well, considering that there's like a whole team that she has, her whole team that do the hair, the makeup, the clothes. Yes, she's wearing the things, but she has her marketing team that says this is what's going to sell, so you put this clown costume on and go perform.
Yeah, but she, like I said, I've seen her when she first started out versus now, and she totally changed her voice. She's changed, I mean, like when she's talking, I mean, that's not the way she really talks. I mean, she put on, I mean, you can hear in certain interviews the way she really talks, and then she starts that, you know, I'm a Barbie type of talk. I don't even want to. I can't even imitate that crap that girl does. And yet everybody is just so influenced by her. Like I said, and the killing part about it, she could really rap. I'm telling you, she's like the best like female rapper out there when she really raps. Not this stuff she's doing. I'm talking about when she really does it. You know what I'm saying? But like, they have commercialized her so much that you can't even hear the art form in her anymore.
So that's just her selling her image. It might not even be her. Like, she might not want to be doing that, but if she had, like, how can I explain this? If she was doing what she really authentically wants to do, she probably wouldn't be as famous as she is now. But, like, right. If you look at her, the way that she looks, that she looked prior to the cosmetic surgery and all that makeup, she was just a regular average woman. But now she has all these breast implants, hip implants, butt implants. That's what sells. And this whole hypersexualized, almost unhuman image is what's getting her money. So that's why she's doing it.
Now, Dr. Wilson, yeah, I know you noticed society. Why is society today so hypersexualized? I mean, like, from at least when I grew up, you know, in the 80s and 90s versus now, I mean, it's like on overdrive.
You know, it's hard to say, but I think it always has been. I mean, if you look at the Renaissance, and other colonial periods where things were, at times were, like, people were being sexually embraced and exploring, and then in colonial times it's very conservative, yet they had these swinging parties and all kinds of like interesting and bizarre sexual encounters. I think it's human nature to be sexual. Society, it ebbs and flows as how much it's embraced or it's not considered taboo. Again, I go back to it's all about a balance, finding a balance, and when we start repressing or suppressing certain things, It's going to be there eventually. It'll come up, and oftentimes the more we push against it, the harder it comes back at us. So I think it's we need to just be mindful on how we're expressing ourselves sexually, be careful and safe, and seek to have healthy relationships with the people you engage with sexually.
Now I got a question. You know what? And a lot of times, guys are dealt with this. Do you think a person, if they have a preference in the area of their women or whatever, or a woman has a preference in a man, do you feel they should go with their preference or allow society or their community to pressure them to go with something they think is best?
I think when you go with your heart and you tap into what you really want, you're going to be happiest. Anytime you settle for something that's, even if it's a job that you think, well, it's going to financially provide stability, you know. But if you hate what you do, this is why I do so much work in companies, going in and talking to them, you know, helping employees become more motivated and engaged. It's because sometimes people just take a job for the money, but it's not what they do. And if you don't like what you do, you're not going to do it well, and you're going to be miserable doing it. Same thing in a relationship. Find someone who really makes you even better. Don't get into a relationship because you need that person as a crutch of some sort or because your family or society is pressuring you to take that person on. I mean, it could be a good relationship. Notice, though, when you are pursuing this person, are you repeating an old pattern, or is this actually someone who's going to lift you up and make you even better? Not in a way that they're a crutch, but you know, you're at a good baseline and they're going to take you to the next level.
Now, Ms. Gabriella, you know what I was going with that conversation? That question I asked him?
Yeah.
You already she already knew where I was going with that question. That's why I say, well, because I just wanted to hear what you had to say, because in the black community, a lot of times when it comes, now, I'm going to say this is what I noticed. A lot of times as black men, if you have certain preferences, you are really, like, attacked, and you're in a wake, almost pressured to choose within a certain parameter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just happens a lot. Ms. Gabriella knows, you know, she can co-sign that this does happen. Okay? But the guys who are doing this, you know, they are, I think they should get the people they want, personally. Whatever they want whoever. But also, I don't think they should announce it to the world like that's what they like, because you can also, like, kind of eliminate a little bit of the attack on you if you kind of keep your mouth shut sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Off of what you like. But, you know, Dr. Wilson, what I want to know, we have this issue in the black community, but and maybe you can explain this, maybe you work with some people in the black community, between in the area of dating when it comes to light skin and dark skin. Like, and one group feels they're not wanted, the other group, you know, they may get more attention, but sometimes they got to, like, prove they're more, I guess, black, more down for the cause. I'm saying that right, Ms. Gabriella?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Dr. Wilson, why do you feel this, you know, this goes on in the area of dating? I mean, 'cause it's a big issue. It really is.
Yeah, I think it. I mean, I haven't directly encountered this. From a psychological perspective, I did date a black girl once, and her parents were really upset that we were dating. So mm-hmm. obviously that didn't last. But I think it comes down to, you know, sticking to your roots. That's what is coming up for me. It's, you know, certain people, I mean, even in the white community, there are certain, like, religious differences, and some families pressure their kid, like, you have to marry a Catholic or you have to marry a Baptist. So I think it just comes down to maintaining family of origin roots.
Because I don't know if you know how complex it is. Like, as a black man, it's like, if, you know, if you date interracially, oh, that's a problem. That's a big problem. That's like, mm-hmm. you're public enemy number one. Okay, but every other man outside of the black community, he could date and no one says anything about him dating interracially. Or if he says, you know what, I'm only going to date black women, if he says that he only wants one tone of black woman, one hue of black woman, that's a problem also. So it's like the black male is always, like, pressured into, like, who he has to choose based off of color. And to me, like, why? I mean, why you got to choose certain color to mean anything?
So that's interesting. They don't have the same standards for the women. It's just for the men?
Well, yeah, the women can date whatever they want to date.
Wow.
Ms. Gabrielle, is that true?
Yeah, that's the funny part. Because for some reason, if a black man wants to date outside of his race, that's the goodness. That's like the deadliest sin in the black community. But if a black woman walks around and has a white boyfriend, everybody's like, "Ooh, Tammy got her a white man," you know?
Yeah, it's a celebration. I seen a video the other day, Dr. Wilson, where they had a guy, he's a YouTube comedian, he's funny. I just laughed at the video, but I started looking at it again. And he came up, you know, he's white, he came up to a bunch of black women, and he was messing with them, picking with them. And they thought he was so funny. But I thought to myself, you know, if a brother walked up to him and did the exact same thing he did, no different, they'd be looking at him like he crazy. You know, he'd probably get cussed out or whatever. It's like, as brothers, we can't do certain things. But like Ms. Gabriella said, you know, they were giving the man the number and everything, which is no problem. I can care less about that, personally. But, I mean, like, why? You know what I'm saying? Like, what is it with us as black men that we can't do whatever we want? But, you know, like Ms. Gabriella said, on a flip side, nobody crucifies, you know, our counterpart for the same thing.
That's really interesting. I'd love to talk to you more about this topic and find out some of the differences for you guys, because I didn't know about that. And I'm always interested in learning these things because it's important for me as a professional to be educated on this. I do know that throughout time and cultures and societies that different standards are held against the men versus the women and vice versa. And a lot of it depends on resources and cultural standards. So in some cases, looking at like polygamy, you know, in some countries, like one man would marry multiple women. In other countries, one woman would marry multiple men, depending upon the land that was available. So this kind of stuff fascinates me. I also have a degree in cultural anthropology, so I've studied cultural systems. You know, that's a kind of a hobby of mine, so I'm really interested in this.
Well, see, they had one person put in a comment and say, how about more and more, not knowing mean American black males are traveling to Africa and Brazil for mates, especially Africa, where the women's complexion is uncompromised. I mean, that's also been going on as well, Dr. Wilson.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big documentary on men traveling to Brazil because they said they cannot find a mate within America and the culture within, you know, American, at least within our race. And so they go travel to get people possibly by race, whether they Afro-Latina or just African, you know, women in general. And they are coming back with these women. Like, so, you know, I mean, it's very complex. I mean, it's something you really probably could get into a little bit more than, you know, most, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of guys that really need, you know, to talk to somebody due to some of the things they deal with due to color. Because someone my skin color, you know, Dr. Wilson, we told from the day we were born, you know, that we black, we ugly, we tar, we got big lips, big nose, all this other stuff. That's the first thing that we hear as, you know, a dark-skinned black man. And the women hear it as well. The little girls hear it as well. I think probably to the 10th degree with them than us. But all in all, it still has an effect on you as a child.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you want to, you know, you start resenting those who call, who, you know, hurt you like that.
And that's kind of speaking towards some of the emotional trauma that society can, or the family members can inflict on their kids as they're growing up. And it's, you start questioning your own identity, you know, your personal and social identity of who am I and how does these messages, how do I feel about these messages that are being sent my way, and is how's it impacting my judgment? So it's a very complex topic, what you presented today. I think it has a lot of various tangents and facets that we could discuss, and it's exciting. So I'm really glad you put this one together today, because I think it opens up a lot of other doors about what is society's role on who we are and how we develop and our goals and ambitions in life.
Yeah, I mean, it goes from, I mean, Dr. Wilson, I mean, you can make a whole life off of studying the black community, literally, and our issues, and but no one is really coming up with, you know, solutions to, you know, the issues and to the, you know, to the problems that we have. Because we have a colorism problem within our own community, literally. It has nothing to do with no other culture. I mean, it's a thing to be one skin tone versus another.
I you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to check with some resources and see what I can come up with and what research has been done. I mean, it's unfortunately a lot of research, the funding comes from, you know, where people are going to make money. So there's a lot of research that doesn't happen that should happen, and sometimes only happens once enough attention is drawn to it. So I'm going to get in touch with some people and see what's has been done and where the direction of this research is going, because it is fascinating to me.
Yeah, now, Ms. Gabriella, you can chime in on this. I mean, also one complex issue we have is we have a big hair issue. Ms. Gabriella can explain that better than me. Ms. Gabriella, you want to explain it to him, the hair issue that we have in our community versus others?
A lot of that comes from childhood. I can tell you how many slaves, even when I go to, yeah, it comes from slavery. And it also comes from the family, unfortunately. I myself have heard, you know, my relatives go through, or, like, they go through what I went through when I was a kid. It's like, oh, well, you got that nappy hair, and your hair is so curly. It looks like a Brillo pad, and, oh, stop playing out in the sun. You're getting too dark. All kinds of things, but they'll insert your insult your hair texture and say that you need to go and get a relaxer, or you need to get it chemically processed so it'll be straight, so that you'll have quote unquote good hair or pretty hair. And so when girls grow up, they have that issue where they feel that their own hair texture is not beautiful, because all their life they've been told that their hair texture isn't as nice as any other race. And
if they're a dark-skinned black woman, it gets a little worse. Well, everything I told you, now add that to the hair thing.
It's making me feel sad, because it's so like self-deprecating, as you know, there's so many negative messages coming at you guys that came at both of you when you were younger. I mean, it's almost like you should be ashamed for who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And then the mainstream media don't make it any better.
True.
Because, yeah, brother, you know what I'm saying. Don't make it any better, because anytime you show black males on TV, they're criminals. Let's somebody calling. Let me get here, add to this group call. Let's see here.
Hello?
Hey, hello, Mr. Ryder. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How's it out there in Holland today?
Oh, it's great.
Great. You got any questions for Dr. Wilson?
Yeah, I was just hearing Ms. Gabrielle talking about how in her family that it was calling her hair nappy and all kind of things. But Yeah, I have a whole different part of that. When I was younger, and I wanted to straighten my hair because my hair was really curly, and I was getting teased a lot in school because my skin was my skin is darker, and I have curly hair, and they would call me, "Oh, you have white people hair. You have all kind of." They would call me all kind of nasty names. It's because my father is his mother is white, and my grandmother is Spanish, so I have the mixture of everything. And I will get a lot of teasing, and I ask my mother, "Yeah, can I please straighten my hair just to look like normal?" And yeah, I had a bad experience with dealing with children in school. Stuff. I didn't have it in my family, my mother didn't want me to straighten my hair neither. And she said, embrace your hair. And still up to this day, I have problems with dealing with my own hair. So it's like, yeah, I know how she's feeling, but I feel it in a different way.
Yeah. And this right here, this is an opportunity for everyone who's listening to this to make changes, to be mindful, and to know, like, you hear these messages that you guys are sharing from that you received when you were children and how it's affected you. I mean, if you have kids or if you're around kids, this opportunity to be mindful and to make a difference and to promote a positive self-image in children. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Hold on, got another call coming through. Let's see for a second. Hey, area code 832, you on the show?
Yes, hi, Advice Show.
How you doing?
Doing good. Yes, I'm a black male in the Houston area, and I recently moved from an all-white neighborhood to like a black neighborhood. And at the gym, girls, I mean, they tell me when I try to pick them up that I sound too white, because my English is so proper, and it's really insulting for me as a black man.
That is very insulting. It's kind of saying like you as a black male cannot speak proper English, or that we're supposed to be ignorant or speak, you know, with slang 24/7, like we can't be educated. That is very offensive. Now, who are telling you this? Black women to tell you this?
Blacks, Mexicans, the Browns usually, the brown people.
Okay, so brown people, got it. Brown people, got it.
I had the same experience.
Hey, what's up? This is Dizzle, man. Hey, just give him a shout out.
Oh, man,
to
Dizzle, you're playing around, dude.
Yeah. Hey, this is a great show. Hey, man, just listening in. So, all right, I'm going to get
out of here. Yeah, see, he is getting me all serious on this conversation.
All right, Advice Show, let us.
Yeah, me going, man. What's going on, dude?
Something was up. I just could tell by the voice. I was like, oh, this sounds like someone's playing a joke.
Hey, y'all are doing a good job, man. I'll let y'all get back to the show. Sorry. Later.
All right, man. But, you know, back to what they were saying about, you know, the hair. You know, this is what, you know, goes on in the black community, Dr. Wilson. I mean, people could constantly have the story. The women have the, you know, the colorism, and, you know, a lot of times, yes, and one person says that this colorism was started by, you know, racism due to slavery and the Klan and all the people that wanted to keep that institution going. Now, you know, why is it, one person wanted to know is, you know, what motive did they have by keeping this colorism going in the United States? Because it had a lasting effect on the black community, and nobody really wants to address that.
Do you think it's just a residual residual form of racism?
Well, I mean, you could look at how things are set up, you know, in this country, you know, Dr. Wilson. I mean, it's like when you look at TV, even though America is so diverse, America is diverse with every, you know, person on, you know, the planet. Yet we don't see that in corporate America. We don't see that in government. Mm-hmm. We don't see that in anything, you know, the police, judges. We don't see that on the TV actors and actresses. We don't really see that. I mean, we just see kind of like one group of people. I mean, you have to admit that. I mean, this is what we see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really, or if we are shown, or people of color are shown, it's shown in a negative light. Feels like we talk about black women.
Yeah.
When they're shown on TV, they're not shown really as good, you know, things to be. Either they're loud and ghetto, or they are very, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe like mammy-like.
Mm-hmm.
Or are they just a sexual object?
Yeah.
Versus their counterpart, they can be the wife, the love interest, everything. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
Can I ask a question? Do you have a lot of black people on TV in America?
Do we have a lot of black people on TV in America?
Yeah.
We have some. I mean, not as a relation to maybe we would say, let's say white people. Yes, we have black people on TV in America. I mean, shoot, we like, yeah, I guess you want to call what Miss Gabriella some shows like Love and Hip Hop TV.
Okay, because we don't get those here, and we in Holland, we don't have no black people on TV, not one.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow, in Holland.
We have like this so-called type of, they would put it as this way, they would put it the lighter complexion, they would try and make it more lighter than, and promote it as a black, but if you want to see your own complexion, really of a darker, of an African, or those kind of people, you don't have that. You don't have Muslims on TV. You don't have. It's only Dutch people, the white people, basically. You would see that on our TV, on the commercials, everything, and even on the posters and on the street, it's pure white. So, and it's really hard because I was getting into modeling and. Doing that, I was with I went to a place to model, and one girl told me, why are you here? I like, what do you mean? Because she said, do you know that this girl, the woman who does this modeling thing, she wouldn't put you on the site. I like, how you mean? She said, because they don't put black people on the site. I was like, okay, but they never say it on the site, you know? And, yeah, it was very upsetting to me. And when they take the pictures, they take it, like, in such a hurry, and then they take the time with these the white girls, and they take the time with everything with them. And then when it comes to my pictures, like, they was doing it hurry, and, like, I was like, what the heck is going on here? And I was so shocked, and that's why my boyfriend got into photography, because he was always liking to do photography and so. So that's why we started getting into that, because we want to put our own people on pictures too, you know. But we don't want to just do black alone. We want to do all kind of people. So it's very difficult to get on the... to get in the media of, I don't know how you speak in English, sorry, and the business in Holland, it's not that easy.
That's why you got to take to the internet, sister, because the internet is where it's at. Now, I got a call, 314 area code. You on the show? You got any questions?
Well, you know, I was going to make the point that, you know, a lot of this stuff derives out of white society. You know, you go back in the 50s and look at the baby doll test, the black baby doll test, and the results were the same in America as it is in, you know, some European countries, Finland, Amsterdam, yep, and so forth. You got Asians complaining today that their characters are being whitewashed. And, you know, look at ballerinas. They call Misty Copeland, who is, you know, complexion is more white than she is black. She's put out there and labeled as being an African American. I doubt that she would even ever go that way. Whereas you have other ballerinas who are dark complexion, and they never ever get a spot, even in Britain. They complain about, you know, those very same things. Sarah Robinson is very dark skinned, a very excellent ballerina, but she's not out there. So I wanted to ask the doctor, why is it that white society, you know, portray these things, initiate these things? Is it because they just don't want to give up the, you know, the wealth or the money that's derived in these different areas of modeling, stage shows, and so on and so on?
Yeah, I mean, I can't, you know, I can't speak for the institutions. My feeling is, you know, I've been asked the question, so, like, what's the deal with, like, racism should be over with, because, you know, we had the Civil War and everything, you know, and it's been years since then, so why does it matter? And I always bring it back to this whole idea of transgenerational trauma. Things are going to get passed down, and we're going to inherit all this stuff from our ancestors unless we are mindful and vigilant to change and break the pattern. So
now,
a lot of this is in place.
Now, myself, the way I circumvent that, I just watch Nigerian movies.
Nice.
That's one way of doing it, like I said. And also, like I said, you could choose what you want to watch. I mean, you don't have to watch everything. It's just like, I love DVR. I choose what I want to watch, and that's it. You know, if I'm not online doing my own thing. Because really, I find more entertainment online, and I see the most black people acting a fool online or doing something educated online. They got more characters online entertaining me than I find on regular TV. That's why half the time I'm not even watching regular TV. I mean, you'd be surprised some of the characters that we have online. You know, and... And does Gabriella know that?
Mm-hmm. But the benefits that you get is because you're in America, and it's more bigger, and the benefits you get that we don't have, we can't get channels from your country on the internet. That's the difference. So it's very hard. If I want to watch one of your what are the things Gabrielle watched? Hip hop something?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I watch Love and Hip Hop. Love and Hip Hop Atlanta,
sorry.
About to come on with Stevie J. My wife hates Stevie J. I love him because it makes him mad.
We don't get a benefit to the
VH1.com.
No, they block it. We can't watch it from our country.
Wow, they block your internet?
Yeah, they would block it because
y'all don't go through proxy service to see it.
Every try, they would block you because they know that you have the IP address shows everything. So, when you have your IP address shows in Holland, they block it one time. Holland is very controlling. They block everything, especially when you want to see something from other country.
Wow, I didn't know that. Well, what about so you can access YouTube because YouTube's everywhere, but but you can't access sites like MTV, BET, or
no, you can't. You can't even watch like if somebody puts up like for instance one of the shows on one of a popular show from BET as well, or for instance Bad Girls Club, I see that, and
mm-hmm.
It was blocked. They started blocking it. I used to watch Justin TV, and they blocked that too.
Did they? Hey, let me ask you a question. Have you been to my website yet?
Yeah, and then I'm not allowed to see it neither.
Wow, you can't see my website either. That sucks.
I can't.
Man, Holland sucks. You can't even go on my website, but you still go on YouTube, right?
Yeah, I still go on YouTube. I still watch the things via YouTube, but I can't go on your site.
Wow, that Holland sucks. You need to move to America. You need to get your passport and just come on. Everybody else coming over here. You might as well. You're getting
I'm
a mile in over
America.
It just depends where you live.
Yeah, I know, because Holland is the same thing. So, yeah.
See, with Dr. Wilson, he's up there in Hill Country.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, like some mountains up there and everything. It's been a little while since I've been to Austin, but, you know, I remember last time when I went up there was driving to Lando. Oh, my God, all the mountains is pretty up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but like I said, I don't know. I can't be around the mountains too much because I don't trust them animals. It ain't about to be Crocodile Hunter Part 2.
Before we end here, I was wondering if I could just pitch some books and resources.
Yeah, go ahead.
A big thing for me is it's about informing. So my website is, it's not just like my information about coming to see me for psychotherapy. I'm revamping it. I'm going to start doing a monthly newsletter. If you send a email to me at david@drdmwilson.com, that's david@drdmwilson.com, and put the advice show in there, you can be eligible, or you will get 10% off my book that's coming out in a couple months, as well as get into the newsletter. And the monthly newsletter will have lots of information and resources for a variety of topics to help increase your happiness, reduce stress, random information to various things that are happening in the media to help better inform you and hopefully reduce your stress and make you happier. The book I've mentioned for parenting is called Brain-Based Parenting, The Neuroscience of Caregiving for Healthy Attachment by Hughes and Balin. It's an awesome read. It's written for both the general public and for professionals to use. So if you want to take it into a counselor to help them work through some of the concepts in it, or just do it on your own, it's great. Another website I'm really recommending for parents who are getting sick of their kids playing so many video games, it's called Learning Works for Kids. And this website actually has evaluated all sorts of apps and video games and shows how some of the popular games can actually increase certain skills. Now you have to pay for this service, I think, for part of it. But you can check out what your kids, maybe some of their deficits are, where they're struggling in school, and find out what games are out there right now that would actually help cultivate and improve those skills. And they're not just like cheesy games. They're actual like games that are really popular. And I really like this idea because parents get so sick of their kids playing video games, but it is an opportunity for them to learn and improve their abilities.
Okay, if you're interested in those, you know, reads that Dr. Wilson is telling you about, and also his book, like I said before, make sure you put in the advice and get 10% off of his book. Now, if any of you living in the Austin area and you need any services, hit him up. You know, since you kind of, you know how he speak and how, you know, he communicate himself. Now, we got, less than 3 minutes left on the show. I said, Dr. Wilson, I definitely thank you for joining us. I know you probably got to turn in and get to the office tomorrow.
Yes.
But I appreciate you. And, yeah, we need to communicate about, you know, the situation that you did not know about the black community and see what, you know, it could be talked about a little bit further.
I'm very interested in that. And thank you for the opportunity. I hung in there longer than I was anticipating, but the conversation was so intriguing I couldn't just leave. So thanks again, and Gabriella, it was nice meeting you, and as well as all the listeners. I appreciate your time and interest.
All right, thank you, Dr. Wilson.
Have a good night.
All right, so Ms. Sharida.
Yes.
I got to ask you a question. So, when y'all moving to America? Because like, that don't sound so good. I'm gonna ask you that again. When you gonna move to America?
A good question. When I know, I will tell you.
Yeah, you got to move, because I can stay in no country blocking my internet. Oh, no.
Yeah, I thought it was my iPad, but it wasn't. So I went to my boyfriend's computer, and I couldn't get it through there. So I went to my laptop, and I couldn't get it through there neither. So I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know what's going on. And then I see, I didn't read the thing underneath say that it was not available in our country. So, yeah.
Yeah, it blocks your ISP. Yeah, mm-hmm. So we don't have those kind of blocks. Now, they tried to do, you know, want to talk about blocking people from certain sites or blocking, you know, your IP if you downloaded certain things, but they constantly fight it here, you know, so we won't have those things. Cause I don't think the internet should be regulated. I mean, you grown, you go access what you want. Now, if you're accessing, of course, child pornography or something terroristic, then, well, yeah, that's different. But, you know, you should be able to, you know, do what you want to do. But like I said, I appreciate you calling again all the way from Holland. And, you know, I want to thank everyone for joining the show tonight. Always appreciate you. You know, Ms. Gabriella and I, we try to put on a good show for everybody. So, you know, you can join me as always on AdviceShow.com. But if you can't, like Ms. Sharida can't, you can join me on YouTube.com. You know, so you know, my various channels, the Advice Show TV, Facebook, the Advice Show Twitter, and also Instagram, the Advice Show. Hit me, get my followers up. I'm trying to be like Miss Gabriella. She's famous on Instagram.
oh, can you put Miss Gabrielle's YouTube thing on the knee of your YouTube page?
Yeah, yeah. You know what? You're right. You're right about that. Yeah, I need to get you. Yeah, Miss Gabrielle, I need to get your page, and I'll put it on my watch channel. That way, she can find it.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Yeah, I do.
I hurry up and type this in there.
Yeah, you better hurry up. The show gonna be good. You know, now it's on record. And it don't take long. It don't take long at all. But like I said, I want to thank everyone for joining us, and we'll definitely be back, you know, next week for another show. And Mr. Wright, I hope you call in a little earlier next time. Y'all call in 20 minutes at the end.
Yeah, because I sometimes when I try, it doesn't go through.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
And
yeah,
last time when the sex therapist was there, I wanted to call in and I couldn't get in.
Oh, wow. Yeah, if you can't get in, you should send me a message on Facebook. I have my Facebook fan page open. Say, hey, man, I'm trying to get in. Call me or something. I want to talk.
Okay.
Then we can get you in if I see you on Skype.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, everybody have a good week, and y'all stay blessed.
You too. All right. Have a nice day. I mean a nice night. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.